Hey there.
Hello.
How's it going?
It's going okay. It's going okay. We're nearing the end of the school year, so I'm like,
You're getting real close. Trying to get through it.
Yeah. It's a tale of two worlds. I have one class that they've already done their state testing. And so, I mean, they have like a final exam, but that's a month away. So I'm just like, here's
just chill.
Kind of a project. Here's kind of, you know, a thing.
Review. Stuff.
Yeah, it's like very low-key stuff. And then my other one, they still have to take like the AP exam. So they're like ramping up, whereas these guys are ramping down. It's weird, a weird place to be.
Different levels of intensity.
Mm-hmm. What about you?
I'm good. You may have noticed I switched to a snot rag instead of using tons and tons of tissue. This is just the level of allergies I'm at. I'm essentially a toddler. I'm just always covered in snot. So
it's very eco, though. This is like handkerchief days.
It is. It's mostly just I'm so tired of getting caught where I just sneeze and cover myself in detritus.
Yeah. You. Yeah.
It's fucking gross. Like, sorry, TMI listeners. I woke up this morning and like I will just use my shirt whenever I'm like trying to, you know, in the middle of the night sleeping and I have to sneeze or rub my nose. There were so many like dried snot spots on my shirt this morning. I was embarrassed to see that mirror. I was like, what happened?
You.
They are worse than they've ever been. And I'm feeling very discouraged. Like I'm just low key sick all the time. And it's very frustrating because people treat allergies like not a big deal. They're like, oh, it's just allergies, whatever. And it's like, no, this is like very, like, I can't go outside.
Yeah, that's crazy. I assume you've already taken all the relief that you can get them to give you, right, in terms of shots and stuff?
No, I haven't started the shots, but the shots are a pain in the ass, and they might not even work. For some people, they just don't work. And also, some regions are so bad, Texas included, they just might still not be enough. Like, the stuff I've been reading about are, like, people will say it has reduced my allergies, and it depends on the allergen. But it's a real pain in the ass. You have to go in, like, once a week, and then you taper it down to like every other week and then once a month, but you do it for like fucking 5 years or something.
Oh, wow.
It's ridiculous.
Then after the 5 years of like 52 times five treatments, then you're done?
Supposedly, but I mean, you also have people saying like, yeah, it didn't work. So I'm just like, well, do I really want to spend, you know, fucking thousands of dollars on shots that take a long time? Because you have to sit there because you might have a reaction. So you have to sit there for 30 minutes after they give you the shot.
Yeah.
So some people, they say you can do drops under the tongue, which I'm like, I would way rather do that. But I don't know. I'm looking into it. But another barrier is to get the shots, you have to stop your histamines for like 10 days. And I'm like, if I did that right now, I would need to like go live in a hypoallergenic bubble for 10 days.
Plus, it's got to be sort of, isn't it sort of locally based too? So like if you moved in 10 years, that's a pretty long, big window to be like, I'll be here for 10 years.
That's the number one question the doctor asks whenever you like inquire about. They're like, are you planning on moving in the next like 5 to 10 years? And I'm like, I don't fucking know the answer to that. Like,
yeah,
maybe.
It's like the rare instance where you can be honest about where do you see yourself in 5 years? Fuck if I know.
I don't know. I mean, if these allergies work, if the shots work, then maybe I don't have to move. But currently, man, I'm looking at it.
Yeah. You get existential, like, I don't know, maybe a heap of ash, like, who knows? It's 5 years, a lot could happen.
Truly, truly. Okay, I just wanted to complain. Ugh, it's very annoying.
Yeah, man, that sucks.
It's okay, I'll be okay. Oh, I did see something funny. I remembered. I thought about this like right before I went to sleep, and I was like, that would be a funny opener. And I was really sad that I forgot it, but I remembered it again through my old pal of complaining.
Hell yeah.
So,
what do you got?
I read something that if you sleep on a decline, so your head is slightly lower, there's like a very small increase in like brain circulation or whatever, right? And this was like said in response jokingly to like a study about these like really inhumane looking rooms that are apartments, I guess, but they were basically fucking dorms with like no windows.
Like New York stuff?
Yeah, I want to say it was actually Austin maybe was the example given. But anyway, someone was like joking around like, oh yeah, you can prove that anything is like quote unquote good for you, even if it's like very clearly not good for you, you know? And so this person said the thing about the you know, 2% decline or 5% decline. And I was thinking like, cause of my allergies, I sleep with like 3 pillows stacked up so I can have, you know, drainage. So I'm extra stupid. I'm leaving. I'm getting the blood away from my brain.
Hey, you got to do what you got to do. And you have your own advantages from that, right? Like, that's also good for snoring. Anytime that I have tied on a couple too many or something and I'm going to bed, like, A, obviously, like, drink a lot of water, stuff like that. But then, you know, I'm going to be obnoxious snoring. So one of my counters is stacking up a bunch to kind of build a little ramp, you know?
There you go. I know I snore some, Kyle has reported, but I don't think it's crazy. But yeah, that's the source of my Vemboism, apparently.
Yeah, well, I guess I suffer from that too. That's okay.
You know, sometimes you want to be dumb. Like, I just want to be ignorant.
Wait, but you said that that was in an effort to prove that you could prove anything with a study. So is it technically true or not?
I don't know. I didn't do the deep dive into it. I think the point was like it was a very small increase.
Okay.
So, but it's something that's like so obviously unpleasant that no one would actually do it.
Yeah, it doesn't seem. I don't know how you would do that.
I have tried it in desperation of trying to clear my sinuses, but it does not work.
Wouldn't you need one of those ramp pillows and then like sleep on that part, like on your body and then the rest of you or something? God,
I feel like it would just hurt your neck.
You'd have like a mound of pillow, like a second bed's worth of pillows under you, except for your head.
Oh, that would be rough.
Yeah, I don't know about that. But brain flow, it's important to be smart.
Okay, what's going on out there?
Terrible, terrible things.
Well, duh, I knew that. Oh, real quick. I was at an author event, and I was like talking to this guy. He was real nice, and he was like kind of like positioned as like this veteran of this festival that I was at and like, you know, has done a ton of kids books. And I was talking to him for like a long time, and me and a couple of other people, and I realized this man's wearing a CIA t-shirt.
Was it like an official CIA one, or was it like one of the frat boy ones that's like
Central? What would that even be?
The FBI ones are easier.
But. Yeah, the FBI ones are obviously easier. Now I got to think of what it would be, though. Central Intercourse Agent?
Oh, heck yeah.
That's not great. Like,
not agent, but like...
Ass man.
Central's kind of boring, too.
Yeah, it is kind of cunty intercourse ass man.
Yeah, we'll leave that one to the listeners,
I guess. These are all terrible.
Come up with a better CIA loser acronym. Okay, but like a real CIA shirt?
Yeah, because I checked because that was my first thought. Like, surely this is a joke shirt. It was not a joke shirt. And I was like, okay.
He just supported the CIA. He was just like,
yeah. And I was like, I've been talking to you for a while. I was like, man, I hope I didn't say anything weird. I'm pretty low key at like author and, you know, in the general public events. So, but still, I was like, oh gosh, like, no wonder you're talking about like skiing and shit.
That's wild.
It was weird. I told Kyle, and he's like, are you sure it wasn't like the Culinary Institute of America? I'm like, no, I think I would notice that too. I read it to be sure.
Yeah. It had like the big fucking eagle on there and all that.
Yeah. It was the eagle. It was like the seal. It was the whole fucking shebang.
Yeah. It was clearly, I think the CIA. Culinary thing is way, like, it looks benign because they lean out of that. They're like, no, we're not the CIA.
That's what I was wondering. Like, it'd be really cool if, like, I think that's a smart call on them, on their end of, yeah, let's lean away from that. Our brand is completely different looking. But then, like, they should have one novel t-shirt where it's, like, the same seal, but it's just an eagle with a chef hat.
That would be good.
Because, you know, isn't the eagle always carrying, like, arrows and shit? He could be carrying, like, a spatula.
Oh, what would be good? So, yeah, a spatula in the arrows part, and then the olive branches, you could leave that the same or make it a bottle of olive oil.
Ooh, yeah. Or some sort of herb. Some rosemary.
And then give him some cool CIA agent sunglasses.
A little apron.
Yeah, this is pretty good.
This is cute. I would buy this shirt.
You got to get in contact with
Coloring
the
Institute.
CIA.
Hey, I don't actually know y'all.
I don't think that's probably fair use. I don't think they have any trademark on like ability on government seals. So
I don't know how that works. I bet if it's parody, you can get away with anything.
Yeah, well, I mean, they'd be making money off of it because it would be their, like, they would set, presumably, Culinary would sell it.
Yeah, but like...
The CIA wouldn't have grounds to care.
If you change it enough, then it's like satire, right?
Yeah, well, yes, but it's, you can't say, like, this is just me commenting on your... Because you are, like, selling it as a shirt, but I don't know.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
But I don't think government seals like that or designs like that can be... I don't think they can complain. They're just the government. Like,
yeah, what are you going to do? You're going to look like a real asshole if you come after people for that. And you have enough like fucking fires to put out, I'm sure.
Yeah, that would be a real change of pace for people to all of a sudden decide that the CIA were assholes, you know?
apparently, people out here wearing shirts for them.
That's so weird.
It's very weird.
He's like a listener to this, and he's like, what? The CIA is okay.
Well, I mean, we were in a conversation with someone wearing one of those, like, we believe in science and, you know, Black Lives Matter, you know, rainbow list of ideals. And they were getting along swimmingly.
Liberalism.
Mm-hmm.
What do you want to talk about first? I feel like there's the big story and then there's anything
big
else.
Big stories. And I mean, I've got scraps, you know, me. Just little tweets, little doodads, you know.
Well, let's do a little bit of meat and then we'll jump into scraps.
That sounds good.
But the meat may consume a bunch of our time because it's the big, huge campus protests.
Dude, yeah, shit is popping off.
We're recording on Tuesday. I'm getting stuff that they're sending in NYPD into Columbia.
Jesus.
Police officers in riot gear are showing up. Yeah, so, I mean, they're getting ready to bust heads, I'm sure.
It's... really prevalent. It's going like it's like across the country, tons and tons of universities. Like I feel like it started more with like Columbia and there was another one that I can't remember now. Was it
City
Berkeley?
College of New York? Yeah, there's stuff out in USC,
California.
I think maybe, or I don't know, California. Yeah, somewhere over in California.
Great geography, guys. Yeah, no, I feel like I open Instagram and every time I do, there's a new one happening or crazy developments happening in one of the already established ones.
Yeah, and even, you know, down here in People's Republic of Austin in UT, you know?
Yeah, I saw a few images from that.
Didn't seem quite as, I mean, it was intense, but not quite as settled in terms of having big encampments and stuff like that, but...
So big... story here, I guess, the broad story, is they want their campuses to divest from, like, pro-Israel companies? Is that what they're saying?
Yeah. Their demands are, in addition to amnesty for current student and faculty protesters and stuff, like, because, I mean, in, I know, Columbia, probably other places, they've done suspensions already and are threatening expulsions altogether. In addition to that, they're also demanding that the schools cut ties and cut investments with companies that do business with Israel or Israel-linked companies, things like that. I know there was one in our neck of the woods in UNT that wasn't, it didn't meet with police response at all. It was just a demonstration. They were demanding that they disclose their investments so that they could A, know if they're doing any of the investments that they want to protest.
Good.
They also wanted the College of Engineering to sever ties with weapons manufacturers Lockheed Martin and Raytheon, friends of the show.
Jesus.
Apparently with ties to the College of Engineering at UNT.
Wow. I mean, it wouldn't be surprised. They have a decent engineering program from what I hear.
Decent enough, says Lockheed Martin and Raytheon.
Yeah, right. They're like, good enough for us. We'll fucking take that.
Yeah.
Damn. Okay. I mean, go UNT. Love Denton. Love it up there. Reasonable asks, IMO. Like, you don't want your school to be complicit in genocide. Like, that's not what you're paying it for.
For real. That was upwards of 1,000 people at that protest. And that was organized, some shout outs to the organizers there, by Palestine Solidarity Committee, UNT, and nice. UNT, Young Democratic Socialists of America. So Young DSA.
Wow. Well done, Dentonites. Love y'all.
Yeah. But elsewhere, it's like apocalyptic in terms of campus like level violence, and it's crazy like what they're doing.
Dude, yeah, they are dragging people off. They are just, it looks nasty.
It shouldn't be that surprising. It ends up being that way, but like it's just a complete echo in kind of startling ways to like the campus protest movements against the Vietnam War.
Oh, yeah. I've seen like one-to-one images like right next to each other of like someone, you know, being carried off by cops and shit. It's like, yeah, well, come on, guys.
Yeah, literally the building that they occupied in Columbia University, Hamilton Hall, they also occupied that same building in 1968. And that was, you know, against the Vietnam War. And I think Students for Democratic Society and some other groups were involved in leading that protest back in the day. But the weird thing is, to me, it shouldn't be that weird, but it still is, because I think a lot of these guys are believers in not wanting to look hypocritical in most cases.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not your right-wing guys, but your liberals are. And it's like, maybe not you, but like people that you thought were cool were doing this back in your, when you were in school, you know?
Yeah, yeah, like I think there's something to be said for the student movements and how they've always been like on the pulse of a lot of these social movements, you know, like they were telling us like, hey, let's fucking get out of Vietnam. Like they're telling us about income inequality and like the, what was it called? The Occupy movement. They have been ringing the alarm bell in many situations where like it took maybe other people, I don't know, not necessarily, like, it's not like they're the only enlightened ones here, but, like, they were ahead of the game for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I think it's really fucking telling when it's like, well, what happens when you get a diverse group of people who are interested in education all hanging out together? Oh, turns out they have some ideas about how things should be. And sometimes those ideas are right.
Yeah. I mean, it's in some ways a classic generational case of, like, you know, the older establishment not paying attention to, oh, just young, stupid kids. They don't know what they're doing.
I think that's the frustrating thing, too, is that, you know, so many people are going to dismiss this as, you know, I feel like college kids are really easy to shit on because like people still view them as this like entitled group. But it's like, dude, like it's really hard to be a college student, especially if you're fucking, you know, like most people paying for it with a mix of debt and jobs and just hope, you know?
Yeah.
So it's not, I think people have this idea still of you used to be able to pay for it pretty easily. And like, it's this very luxurious time where you're not having to work for 4 years. And like, that's not the case anymore.
Yeah. Which I mean, in some cases it is, if you, you know, are lucky enough to have,
oh, for sure,
you know, it paid for it one way or the other. But I mean, even then you're still taking a risk in terms of, you know, crossing the university in any way. Losing, you know, your scholarship funds or whatever, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I could easily see this being turned into a, you know, whatever. They're just young, idealistic, and dumb, or, you know? But, I mean, faculty's out there, too, is a thing.
Yeah, and I don't know. What I get from the official response from this, whether that's from the mainstream press or if it's from the campus officials or from the government itself, I know there was like 20 something House Democrats that signed a letter that was saying that they were demanding that Columbia like get these students the fuck out of there.
They're what
like,
the
kick
fuck?
These kids out. They are making people unsafe. They were saying stuff about like federal law. They were like title, whatever. Says
oh
that everybody has to be, it was like an education funding thing, you know,
yeah,
every student has to feel safe there. And it's meant for like, you know, discrimination and shit.
Not fucking Zionists.
Right. Yeah. These guys are like, oh, if you criticize the policies of the government of Israel, then you're anti-Semitic, blah, blah, blah. We've talked about that a lot on the show, but yeah, they were like, oh, you've got to take action now. Like,
and what the
you're
fuck? Just
like, what are you calling for? Like, you sound one step, you know, removed from Tom Cotton calling for vigilante justice.
Yeah, come on. What are you doing? Like, these are, well, let's be real, you're fucking employers. These are the people that pay you to have a college.
Yeah.
Ugh, God.
They wrote this letter or whatever to the trustees of Columbia University and said basically that some of the things in there were quite stupid, like complaining about the From the River to the Sea.
Okay.
Chant saying it's We've a cry to one. Eliminate Israel and all the Jews within its borders, which is a big logical leap.
Really, it is. From, hey, we would like our land back, please, to let's kill a race. Let's look at the people who are actually killing an entire race of people.
Yeah.
If we're so quick to point out genocide, like, I got a great target for you.
Like, when people say, like, America, the land of the free, are they thinking, shit, that means they want to wipe out, like, everyone who isn't an American? I mean, in some ways, they do.
We do want to do that.
In some ways, they do, but I don't think that in Palestine they're intending to say, when we want, you know, Palestine to be free from the river to the sea, that means we want it to be Jew-free. That's not what anyone is calling for.
Stop fucking oppressing us.
Yeah, we would like to be free together. Like, what if we just had one government?
You can fucking stay here if you're not an asshole.
Yeah, it's not like, you know, people were so worried about this. Remember, we were, when we did our episodes on South Africa, right? And it was, if you come down with apartheid and there's black majority rule, they're just going to, you know, mass murder all the white people, do a genocide and everything, and what? Didn't happen.
No, that's not what anyone wants. No one is after that, except for, let's see, Israel.
Yeah, it's a projection of what they would do if they had, you know, free reign, if they didn't feel constrained by the international community.
Which they clearly don't.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, like, although they do to some degree. I mean, they're not really just going.
I don't know. They're doing, like, mass graves of, like, doctors and children with their hands tied behind their back. Like, it's some ghoulish shit.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Not to excuse. I just mean, they keep threatening the final stage is what I mean. Like, and that's a big thing that's on the agenda, I guess, right now.
Sorry, you have a thing called the final stage. Like, they take a step back. Like, oh, right? This sounds evil.
It's like a final solution or something. Awful. This is what I'm hearing about lately, is that Netanyahu is out there saying, we are definitely going to, which he's been saying for a while, which that's kind of the weird thing for me, is we're going to do this invasion of Rafah. Like the kind of last refuge there. And it's kind of like, well, are you, you know? And I'm reading different things on it. Some people are saying, like, or one of the theories I see is that Israel wants to use it for leverage. They basically want to go to the table and say, yeah, you better release our hostages or we'll invade. And then I guess if they invade, they don't really have that chip anymore.
Mm.
And there's a lot of logistical problems with it too, from their, you know, evil perspective of it still, is if they invade, they will probably add to the likely toll, like death toll of their own hostages that they have killed in all likelihood. And so that's going to, you know, hurt them politically. I mean, and that's the only way they're thinking about it, the government wise, let's be honest. They're going to be bogged down in more house to house insurgency fighting and things like that. They're going to have more videos of their guys getting blown up by various booby traps. They're going to have more videos of, you know, human beings suffering and everything due to them. And they'd much rather just threaten that and see if they can get some of what they want. So in that way, it's kind of confusing, because I kind of went into it thinking they're just going to push for as much as they can. Like, how much can they wipe out the Palestinians before people stop them? So I would expect them to just go ahead and push. And then, but I don't know, for some reason, they seem a little afraid of the last part of that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, maybe that's, I guess, a bridge too far for them for some reason. But yeah, I mean, it could just be the leverage point too. Yeah.
You know, and I guess I should add this angle to it. You know, in the calculations, we were saying that they're worried about getting bogged down or whatever. Well, why is that? Because of the brave resistance of the Palestinian people there, you know. our side, the West, the United States and the imperialist countries and everything like to focus on the refugees, which it's a terrible story of everything that they're suffering through. Refugees and people besieged and under occupation in Gaza and in the West Bank, you know, and the suffering they're going through is incredible. But what they don't like to focus on as much is what is Hamas and resistant groups there like doing to fight against it. That death toll is real. When people sign up to join the IDF and whatever, they, in a classic fascist way, are told, you know, your enemy is this big, huge threat. And they're also chumps. Like, you're going to blow them away pretty easy.
Don't even worry about it.
That's why they have, like, the little, you know, Netflix, Hulu, full entertainment suite in their tanks and everything. It looks like a limousine in there. Because they're just chill. Like, they're just there to do their service, have a good time.
Jesus.
Go home. It's not supposed to be like that, you know? So I think that's taking its toll in many ways, politically, among the Israeli population. You know, you see some divides there. It's not 100% everybody's, you know, bloodthirsty, roaring to go.
Interesting. Yeah. I think it's just been such a prolonged time of people's eyes being on it, which I don't think they've ever really experienced, that I think that's taking its toll as well. I think they're used to getting away with all kinds of nasty, nasty shit. And just because of the various, like, circumstances of media and where other people's attention may have jumped to before, they've gotten away with it. And now it's like, this has been months. Like, they're running out of sneaky ass ways to do this.
Yeah, this is interesting too. Another kind of historical angle that is forgotten is, I think people, you know, more or less have this sort of view of things, is that Israel kind of always gets its way, does whatever, you know, it wants to. The United States never says no to it. The international community never forces them to the table or whatever, which is not entirely true. The U.S. has been a staunch ally of Israel and really funds them and lets them do pretty much whatever. But this is actually sort of historically, like, there's been differences and nuance in the past. Like, a friend of the show, Ronald Reagan, you know, everybody's favorite
hero,
totally great guy. Go, if you find his grave, feel free to piss on it.
That's a public restroom.
In 1982, Israel started shelling the Palestinians, the PLO, their the Palestinian Liberation Organization in Beirut, in Lebanon. And it was a big deal. And Reagan, like, called them up and was like, yo, we fund you. We're not doing that. Like, we're stop it, basically. And he had done something else with, like, voting with a UN resolution to condemn some attack that they had done. So, there, you know, it was like they were more willing to say, hey, we're the patron in this relationship. Like, you can't do stuff that we don't like, because that's not how it works.
It's like fucking Tony, like, calling in a rogue capo, like, hey, you can't just go killing anybody.
Yeah.
Wow.
What do you think this makes me look like, huh? But yeah, like,
damn.
In previous conflicts that Israel has been in, there's always this international dimension of, like, they are militarily strong. They have all this, you know, gear and shit from the U.S. and whatever, and the West to some degree, but they're not, like, without everybody standing by, they're not able to just do this. Like, they're kind of a rogue state in that way, but, like, you can always rein them in. Like, they're not all powerful.
Their weapons come from somewhere, and their support comes, like, by, without everyone else. Yeah, they're just kind of like a guy out there.
Yeah. And so it's just, they're spineless now, and to what, it's a question, I guess, to what degree are they spineless versus to what degree does this align with what they want to do, align with what they want to happen? I mean, because you kind of have to question the motives of the other countries letting them do it.
I mean, that's the thing. If you look at the countries that have come out in support of Palestine, it's like Ireland, it's Jamaica, Barbados. Like, it's all these people that who have experienced intense colonialism. And they're like, hey, I see what's going on here. This is fucked up, you know?
Yeah. And to me, something that isn't, well, definitely is not talked about in regular news sources, and even on the left to some degree, I don't see as much discussion on it, is how much psychologically the U.S. is invested in defending Israel as itself in the Middle East, basically.
Yeah.
Like, it's just us. Like, it's a similar story. There's obviously nuance and whatever, but it's a settler colonial project.
That it wants to be an ethnostate.
Yeah.
Obsessed with religion. Like, yeah, that sounds a little familiar.
Right. And, you know, pretends to be a liberal democracy, all this. It's that really has sort of an apartheid system built into its legal framework and everything.
Where have I heard this? That sounds so familiar.
So I don't know. I think that's a big part of the motivating factor, is to the extent to which we let them fail, we being the United States, you know, imperial project, and the extent they let Israel fail, is whatever embarrassment Israel goes through bounces back to the U.S.
Yeah, and I wonder how that hurts their narrative of kind of power through fear or power through complacency. If you have a population that is so, like, deprived of food and medicine and everything as the Palestinian people, and they're still fighting back against, like, a very powerfully armed military,
mm-hmm.
What does that say about us and our ability to fight back?
Yeah. You have to kind of question, if they do end up getting rolled back, having to withdraw, having to make concessions, this is a big if, because everything is still so in flux right now. And like I said, I don't think the U.S. really wants that to happen. But still, if Israel is essentially defeated and has to withdraw and give some sort of concessions to Palestinians in some way or another, is that going to be, like, as bad of a national wound for them as Vietnam was for the United States? Like, is it a big defeat, a big black eye for imperialism?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, I mean, they were reeling from that for a long time, you know, and that was, in similar ways, you know, a brutal occupation, horrible shit that they were doing to people there. We talked about that in our episodes. And people still, throughout all of that deprivation, you know, creatively and heroically found a way to fight back against that.
And I think, too, we talked about this recently, of that kind of mass fuck up inspires people at home to push for more things.
Yeah.
You know, that's when we got way more regulation on like security. What are they called? Like the three-letter agencies. That's when we got, you know, investigations into their shit. That's when we got shit like ADA compliance. You know, like, people were like, oh, we can fucking, like, get shit done.
Yeah. I mean, we, you know, started talking about the protests on student campuses or college campuses and everything. I mean, that big, huge student protest movement was about the Vietnam War, you know, in many respects. There was also, you know, large-scale civil rights protests and everything else, but that was all part of that activist, you know, movement that got people going. And like you said, pushed for more stuff than just that.
Yeah, not just a direct response to whatever it is they fucked up on, but also like, hey, while I'm at it, I'm going to ask for some more shit.
Yeah. That's part of, I think, the explanation behind the brutal reaction at some of these places.
They're trying to shut it down.
But yeah, they're worried that this is reaching some sort of a critical mass, that they're going to have to start responding to people more. While it's just students, in some respects, it doesn't always stay that way. I don't think we're at a moment like that, but that's got to be part of what people in power are thinking. You know, you can't really tell at the moment. You know, I could be wrong. Come Thursday, we could have mass movements in the streets.
Okay. Yeah, who knows? Shit, gotta get my walking shoes on.
But like, you know, you never know what mass demonstration is going to coincide with something else. I mean, you know, good historical example, you have steel workers striking in Petrograd. Boom, you have International Women's Day. The women join out, and then it's like, oh yeah, let's do this. Let's take to the streets. General strike.
That's the thing. It's like it creates a, I almost said a hot box. That's not the right word. Tinder box.
Hey, we could do that.
I would love to create a hot box. No. Like a Tinder box of like circumstances of like, you know, let's say a fucking cop shoots some students, you know, like that's gonna set things off. The more and more of these kinds of situations you have, volatile situations, the more likely something's gonna go wrong and you'll get more and more people pissed and involved.
Yeah. Holy shit. The police have a big fucking truck with like a ladder. It looks like a weird, like evil fire truck that they're, they've got a conga line of police officers going into what they're calling Hines Hall now. Oh no, it's gotta be Hens Hall. It looks like Hines in English, but it's named after a girl who was killed in Palestine. So it should be Hens Hall. But Hamilton Hall is the building they took over. I assume that's where they're going in. They're going in through like a window and they're like conga lining these police officers into it right now.
Holy shit.
I'll copy the link. I'll send it in the chat. Yeah. So you should be able to see it because I gifted it because it's behind the, I fund the New York Times or, it's a reverse announcement you have to do where it's like, New York Times is one of our sponsors. They're not. I'm a sponsor of them, I guess.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, damn. Okay, this is a live stream. Yeah, they're just fucking busting in. That's not... Oh, no. That cannot be good.
No.
Look at the way they're dressed. There's, like, gotta be, just in this image, this video, what do you think? At least 100 cops.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's way more off screen.
Because I didn't come in at the beginning of this video. They put like 20 people through there already.
Jesus.
They've got this perimeter. And on the perimeter, you see some of them have like shields and shit or riot gear and stuff.
Yeah, they are decked out. The ones in the middle look like they're wearing either khakis or no pants, which I'm going to choose to believe it's no pants. Dicks out.
This is problematic. Also, the vehicle looks like it's from Batman The Dark Knight or something. Like, it could go ram the Batmobile over or something.
It does. It looks like some Kinex-ass, like, lever system, you know?
Oh, I mean, it's like the Erector sets or whatever? Uh-huh, yeah. Uh-huh.
That's crazy. Okay, so yeah, this is a live stream that's happening right now. Like, we're literally watching it. So, who the fuck knows what's going to happen? That shit's crazy. I'm sending you a link that is, we mentioned the Russian Revolution, as we want to do on this show. And I saw this lovely little painting.
Oh.
And it's called Rest After Storming the Winter Palace. And it's just like a guy just getting a smoke from a soldier and they're just like chilling.
Yeah.
In the middle of the palace. And there's like dead bodies in the background. But I don't know. I just, something about that just humanizes the whole thing to me of like, these are just people.
Yeah. They're great historical actors from our vantage point. But yeah, it's cool to see. That's why one of the things I like about documentaries is when you can see people in action like that, you see just kind of the frail humanity of it.
Yeah.
Not like frail, but like regular, you know, like.
Yeah, just like, I don't know how to describe it besides human. It's nice.
Yeah. Whoa, yeah, cops were really going at it. And this is Virginia Commonwealth University. Pepper spraying and beating people.
Jesus. I read there's been over like 1,000 arrests for student protesters. If you follow, it's called Let's Talk Palestine on Instagram. They do a really good job of rounding up news. And sometimes they'll do like posts for like, here's what happened this week. Mm-hmm. And it's really easy to read bullet points. I really like that as just like a quick place to get updates. And they'll do daily updates as well. But yeah, I recommend them for keeping up with some of this stuff.
And I don't know what the big takeaway from all this should be, but it's just...
Shit's popping off.
Well, yeah, I mean, what are you supposed to learn? Like, this is what Empire does.
This is fascism. Like, this is it.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point. Fascism isn't necessarily going to announce itself with big Nazi flags. Or like in the Man in the High Castle show where they do like the Nazi thing in the where the stars go, but it's an American flag sort of thing. It's not going to be obvious. Like, they're, and when, once it is obvious it's too late. Like, you have to start, you have to go underground and do that.
Yeah.
But fascistic things like this of just the liberal ideals that these universities, that they're blue states, this is Columbia's in New York, the most liberal of your precious Democratic Party friends, you know, they're like, oh, free speech and free inquiry and, you know, oh, you tanky communists, you want to shut down everything and I'm all about dissent and everything. Well, this is what their leaders like think when you dissent. Like, this is what they do.
I think that's the key, is like, pay attention to when they say something is too far, because that really tells you where their line is, you know, because, you know, you had liberals marching in Black Lives Matter. I feel like they were a little split on that. You know, you definitely had some pearl clutching in that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Too. Oh, I support the peaceful protests or whatever,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I saw shit about that for students, too. Like, why can't they just protest for peace? It's like, what are you fucking talking about? Yeah, there'd be peace if you would stop killing people. It's weird. Like, you see this at every step of major protest movements and social movements. Like, you always have fucking conformist assimilationist liberals who are like, oh, progress has to be slow, you know, fucking West Wing brain shit. You know, you saw that in civil rights of like, well, don't get violent and don't ask for too much and, you know, be respectable, that and kind of shit.
Follow the rules, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You see that in the environmental movement of like, oh, let's just do carbon caps and call it a fucking day. Like, you see where their lines are and like, y'all, the line is not that far from conservatives. They're just like bigger assholes about it. They're just like more blatant. They're like, yes, I would like to shoot them.
Yeah.
And liberals, at the end of the day, also want to shoot them, but like want to wring their hands about it.
Yes, exactly. It's the difference between hand-wringing and like eagerly rubbing your hands together. Either way, the person is going to do the thing to you. They're going to crack down. They're going to use violence. You know, when they say, oh, what about the peaceful protesters? Why weren't they peaceful? In all of these instances, like, it's the state bringing in the violence. Like, when you look at what were the protesters in Colombia doing? They were chanting and doing, like, prayer circles and set up a camp.
They're just chilling.
Yeah, it's fine. Like, that's not a problem.
Look at it with strikes, like, same fucking thing. Who starts it? Like, ask the question. Like, not to be fucking, you know, toddler, he started it, but come on.
No, I mean, it's not a question of he started. It's like, even when they take over this, they take over this building. Oh, how cruel. They've broken some glass. They've moved some furniture to do, you know, rudimentary. I think if we have any listeners in France, you guys will laugh if I use this term, but still barricades, okay?
They were like, you called that a barricade?
Right. These are not full-fledged barricades, but
I could knock American that over with my cigarettes. I'm also sorry if we have listeners in France for that. Sorry. You guys get to be made fun of, right? Like, that's the... You get to be cool and eat delicious food, and I get to make fun of you, but it's because I'm jealous.
Right. Like, I feel if anyone making fun of a French accent is probably also appreciating it. At least they should be, because it's cool.
I am. I'm very appreciative.
I would also be interested, because I know this with English accents, I can tell, you know, obviously in America or in the UK, like regional, you know?
Yeah.
It would be cool to know that for other languages, know them well enough to be like, oh, they got, you know.
Ooh, yeah.
Southern France.
I bet Paris, South of France whatever. Is totally different.
I don't understand them either way, so I can't tell. Anyway, back to it. They've broken some windows, they've disturbed some furniture, maybe even broken some of the pieces, and they've denied this hall being used for campus purposes. I don't even know what this hall normally does. It could be central administration. It doesn't matter. All your shit is on the cloud. Like, all of your records, anything you need desperately for the last month of school. Can't you just let them have a building and move to another one? Can't you just let them be in camps?
Like, it's a big fucking campus. Like, can't you go to another building for class if you really need to meet for class for some reason?
You could do hybrid remote stuff for, again, a couple of weeks. This is college, by the way. This is like, they're not doing finals and stuff at the end of May. It's like mid-May or something, early May. So they're almost done.
They're almost done. Like, yeah, I remember April being like, we're wrapping it up.
Yeah, they did not, my point is, they did not need to do this. They escalated needlessly. If you look at, you know, the UNT example, that went off without a hitch. There were some police kind of around the perimeter that didn't do anything. They were just there. You know, they could have done that. No one's talking about that on the national news because
that's really interesting.
There was no issue. And it's, you know, when they say you got these scary student protesters doing terrible things, you know, inciting violence and all this, they're the ones doing the violence.
So with UNT, was that on campus or in like just Denton in general? I'm curious.
That was at the Library Mall.
Library Mall, that's on campus, yeah.
There you go.
It's a pretty big area too. And that's like the middle. You can go around. You can get to whatever you need to if you need to go around. Like, it's fine.
Yeah.
What's interesting is this is when all the rules nerds come out of like, well, you can't camp out here.
Right.
Or, you know, or like, you know, there's videos of like them not letting in like people who are Zionists and stuff. And it's like, yeah, I wouldn't want to let you into that. Like, you're going to do stupid shit in here, right? Like, aren't you just going to be an asshole?
Right. Like, let them into the encampment area.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, why would you do that? Like, okay, well, I need to go
what
to
are
class
you doing
or something.
Here?
Well, I'll show you how to get to class. Like, or...
There's no class here. We have taken over the building. Go home.
Right? It's wild.
You should be thanking me. I got your class canceled.
If there's a protest for 15 minutes or longer, you're legally allowed to leave.
Wait, what?
You remember that that joke people would say in college?
If your professor doesn't show up.
Yeah, in 15 minutes or whatever.
I forgot about that. Oh.
But yeah, like, they're the ones bringing the violence. It doesn't have to be that way, but... You know, you got to say, why is that? You know, why are they choosing to do that? Honestly, to me, it's kind of stupid. Like, it's kind of a...
It's not a good look.
Bad move on their part. They probably could have let this fling up, and the story would have been, you know, in the press and stuff, would have been, man, these colleges are really, you know, these college students are really getting too big for their britches or whatever.
Mm-hmm. That's all it would have been. But... They escalated both in violence and, yeah, media profile, honestly.
So I do think that their goals are good in terms of supporting essentially what's easily referred to as like the BDS movement, a boycotts, divestment, and sanctions on Israel, right? And Israel companies that do business there and that sort of thing. They want their universities to not have a part of that. Same thing as what we talked about the UNT demands too. They want to cut off, you know, connections with defense contractors and other, you know, war mongering butcher companies like that.
Well, that's the thing. That's where so many universities get their money.
Yeah. Well, that's another common thread with the 1968 protests is that they were, it had recently come out that they were linked with like Defense Department shit.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And so
I don't know why I'm surprised, but.
Right. Yeah. And Columbia did pull back a lot after that because of, you know, what all went down.
I mean, I think that's really fascinating because, like, you have such different populations of students who are obviously against that shit, but then the infrastructure of the actual college is often very conservative and very aligned with that. And that's because it's a business that wants to make money.
Exactly. 100%. You may have your, you know, the right wing likes to get on the radio and rail about the
There's
Marxist
no
professors.
Conservative and, professors out there.
Yeah, and sure, yeah, most of the professors are sort of left-leaning because they're, like, educated. And
they're the faculty. Like, they're normal
people. They care about education and stuff mm-hmm. like that.
But you get up to admin, you get up to fundraising, you get up to donors, especially donors. They're a different fucking story.
Then you're working on career climbing, you know. You're working, you know, you can sort of say, oh, yeah, well, I'm working for a social good of the university and stuff. But you can also justify whatever you're doing with, oh, I have to make the money for the university to do good things, blah, blah, blah.
Yep, yep.
And then especially when you get into sort of federal connections of funding and grants and stuff like that. I don't remember if we did this segment on those climate scientists out there. There were the one was like, yeah, you're getting all the money from freaking oil companies. Like
the two quote unquote friends.
Yeah. 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 And it's like, well, you're getting your money from, you know, one of the biggest like threats to humanity's like safety in the United States. Like, Defense Department. Like, come on.
Dude, somebody made the mistake of, like, as an icebreaker question recently of, what's a company you don't like? And I was like, can I just say Raytheon? And, like, people got really uncomfortable. And I was like, I didn't think that was that hot of a take. Surely we're allowed to shit on Raytheon.
That's so weird. But then afterward, like, one of them comes to you and is like, oh, that's because, like, Jessica's husband works for Raytheon or something.
I know, you know, right? Like, I'm like, fuck, did I just like dox somebody or something? Yeah. Like, someone's going to be like really pissed at me. And like I felt okay because someone was ranting at Starbucks about how they're anti-union. I'm like, all right, cool. I've got a comrade in here. I can say some shit, but I felt a little too safe.
You should have just gone with Amazon. They're too big. Amazon.
Yeah, everyone hates them.
Well, I'm sure somebody was secretly like, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's crazy shit. I do think that their demands are good in the sense of that boycott, divestment, sanctions, that sort of a movement was popping off with equally controversial protests on college campuses throughout the country in the 80s against apartheid South Africa.
Oh, yeah.
And that pressure, that economic pressure internationally, was a huge part, especially once the U.S. finally joined in, a huge part of forcing the apartheid government there to say, well, shit, like, we are losing a bunch of money. And like, they were, like, businesses were pulling out because people would protest, not, you know, for their universities to divest of companies that did business either directly with the South African government or that had, like, factories, say, there. There was this, I forget what the name of it was called, but it was like a standard of some sort where it was like any business that operates there has to, like, treat its workers, can't discriminate, which was impossible because you had to follow the local laws. So it was basically like, yeah, you can't, you know, you can't do that.
You can't do business there. Yeah.
Yeah. So they were demanding businesses do that and everything. And I mean, that piled up, like, capitalists were pulling their money out of South Africa in increasing numbers, and it was making it impossible to govern. And that's why when you get the election of F.W. de Klerk in, I think, 1990, he's like, everyone thinks he's just going to do the normal thing, but he's looking at the numbers like, shit, like, we can't. We have
this cannot stand.
Yeah, we have to start doing small openings, which, of course, you know, leads to actual democratic elections when they legalize the ANC, the fall of apartheid, all that.
I mean, I'm seeing the stat actually on the account I was talking about. In 1985, students forced the University of California to divest $3.1 billion from South African apartheid.
Yeah, that's actually, you know who was the first state to do that? This is crazy. You will never guess the first state to
The
United States state.
Missouri.
You were actually very close.
Ooh, who is it?
It's Nebraska.
Okay, Nebraska.
Took a break from husking corn to divest from South Africa. It was initiated by Ernie Chambers, the only black member of the Nebraska legislature, because the University of Nebraska had accepted a donation of several hundred gold Krugerrands. Like,
what the fuck? Like some fucking doubloons.
Yeah, and he was like, fuck, South Africa sucks. Why are they doing that? And got Nebraska to do that in 1980.
Damn. He's like, what is this fucking treasure chest of German shit doing here?
Yeah. Which, you know, people kind of made fun of at the time. They were like, I would rather do business with South Africa than with Nebraska, so it's not a big deal. God. But, it was an early sign of, you know, obviously universities had billions, like you said, of money to do that with. And eventually they get the actual government on board. Obviously, other countries are way ahead of us on that, thanks to friend of the show, Ronald Reagan. But yeah, like, very surprising to me to read that about Nebraska. So shout out, Nebraska. Good job.
Way to go. And with current boycotts, you have boycotts in Indonesia and Malaysia, which are forcing some equity firms to halt these fast food company steak sales, like in McDonald's. So, like, this is having an economic impact.
Yeah, it's just, it's got to keep...
It has to pile up.
Yeah, essentially. It's not going to lead to... not alone. I mean, like, essentially, you would have to get the U.S. and the Western imperialist countries to back off of completely back off of any support to Israel. If you ever get that, somehow drive that wedge in, then sure, you're going to have they're going to cave. They're going to say, fine, we're opening up, you know, Israel / whatever we rename it to is going to be a democratic, you know, state for everybody, regardless of, you know, it's not a exclusively Jewish state or whatever, right? They're going to end the apartheid system there. I don't know if you're ever going to actually get the United States government to do that. But you might. I mean, people didn't think they were ever going to back down of supporting apartheid. I mean, would you have thought, like, in the 60s, yeah, when they were still doing segregation here, that they would possibly fight against that there? But then 20 years later, there they were.
That's true.
We have no answers. We're just, again, shooting the shit.
Yeah, I was going to say, we are just shooting it.
Give us a scrap. Let's change the tone.
Yeah, I'll give you a little scrap. This is a silly one. There is apparently a trend, a statistical trend. It's called the hungry judge effect. Have you heard of this?
Yeah, you want a court case right after lunch, right?
Yes. Judges become more lenient after a meal break.
And then right before lunch, it's bad? Or is it like at the beginning of the day it's bad? When is it the worst?
Right before lunch.
They're like, fuck this, death penalty, let me go eat some Chipotle.
Yeah. I mean, like, part of it was triggered by this guy, like, I guess doing a TikTok of him apparently eating in his car. The caption is, finally getting lunch and realizing I gave a guy life in prison without parole because I was hangry.
Oh, shit.
Like, how do you get on TikTok and just admit that?
Right, that's evil.
Oh, my God.
No other way to put that. Wow.
That's so great. Of course, some idiot in the comments is like, what if it's AI so there's no bias? Like, do you know anything about AI and how it works, you idiot?
What does that mean? What if it's AI?
What if we have AI judges?
AI judges. That's so good. We could program that into the AI judges and make them get hangry before lunch to solve this guy's, like, dilemma here.
No, they'll be incredibly racist. Don't even worry about it. They'll be the same, if not worse.
I was going to say, unlike our current judicial system.
I know. So, like, yeah, that's not going to work
at
all.
Yeah, I guess that's true. AI judges, not a good idea.
No, really. AI, anything that you're taking away human empathy, not a good idea.
So there's precious little of already, I think, on the bench.
That's not a thing we elect people for. We like meanies.
Somebody's got to have the case before they, even if you give them an earlier break for lunch, you know, somebody's still got to have it. Maybe you could just automatically send those up for appeal for free.
Yeah, you just, like, you block that hour. You don't let anyone have that case. Or you switch your judges to a grazing diet. You put a snack basket out on their little bench.
It's like a buffet table. It's a charcuterie board.
They, like, are hooked up to, like, a blood sugar monitor.
They have
and whenever
a
it gets below something, like, the stenographer's like, excuse me, sir, you need to eat your granola bar.
Now, I was thinking they go, like, I don't know, Lux. I was thinking because judges are kind of older or whatever. They have kind of an 80s retro Lux. They have, like, the guy with the carving knife and the roast beef, you know, over there.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's a wagon wheel restaurant.
Beef meat. You start seeing that in the stenographer records, like, beef me up, man.
Yeah, they have the salad bar, the pre-COVID salad bar, or yeah, whatever.
No, I went a little more techie with it, just like some fucking Soylent and some granola bars, fucking Kind bar or whatever, Cliff bar.
But then it's not going to be worth doing the job, as Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas says, you know, being a judge, you don't make enough money. So.
Oh my God, eat shit. He says nothing except bad. When he does say something, he says something bad.
Yeah, he used to get criticized a lot for not saying anything in oral arguments. Apparently, he started speaking more in those. But I haven't followed to see if he's just saying stupid shit or what. But
I mean, I can't imagine he's saying nice things.
Well, certainly not nice, but there's...
Are they eloquent?
There can be very educated, very intelligent, evil things that you can say. I mean, Antonin Scalia was on the court. Very smart, very evil guy.
Very smart, very evil.
He was the definition of lawful evil.
Very true, very true. Oh my gosh, did you see that story about the fucking... Oh, where is she from? The dog killer?
Jesus, no.
What? This is the worst Google. Dog killer lady politics. South Dakota governor. Okay, wow. That was a really rough Google.
I heard
Google.
About this. Yeah, I did hear about this.
Oh my gosh. She kills this dog because he's not... I mean, it's because he, like, was attacking her neighbor's chickens. Mm. But, like, first off, he was supposed to be in a kennel. Like, way to not close the kennel and not control your dog.
Well, she shot him.
She shot him. So she, what she does, well, she, what she does is, it's not like she shoots him in the moment. She fucking takes him home. Well, she pays off the guy that whose chickens were killed.
Mm-hmm.
And she takes him home and then, like, takes him to a fucking gravel pit and then executes him. And then is also like, well, while I'm here, and then goes and gets a goat that she doesn't like and fucking kills this goat.
The goat took two shots from what I read, which is
bad.
Yeah,
the goat dodged first and she had to take him out again.
That's, and I don't know about the goat case. I don't know if you do it different with livestock. Maybe. Livestock people, let us know. But a dog, if you are, you know, way out in the sticks and you're, you know, working class, you're poor, this is considered AVMA or whatever, whoever, the vet people, a humane form of euthanasia if done correctly.
Mm-hmm.
One shot. That's it. You are rich enough to get to a vet and do it correctly if you're in
for
office.
Real.
Was she the governor or something?
She's the governor.
Like, go do it.
Well, what's weird is, so, like, I was reading about this, like, what people were weighing in on, and they're like, well, there's actually a law about this. And what it says is you can kill, like, a service, you know, a dog or a some sort of, I don't remember the exact word, but you can do that. The property owner can do that. So, you know, you're on your property and some dog comes up, starts eating your chickens. Yeah, you can shoot the dog. But that's not what happened. It's her dog and she took it home and then executed it.
Mm.
Because she was trying to say, like, oh, I was following the rules. And it's like, no, you kind of weren't.
Okay, maybe it's different up there then. I thought in general, at least maybe it's just the veterinary community or whatever considers that a form of, you know, a legitimate form of euthanasia if necessary / done right.
Well, what's weird is she also, like, set it up as, like, oh, she had taken this dog on a hunt and he sucked and he was scaring off all the birds and, like.
Which that part's irrelevant.
Yeah, it's like, so you shot him because he wasn't a good hunting dog? And, like, someone else was like, this is all very normal hunting dog behavior. Like, he just needs to be trained. Like, that's not a bad dog. You just suck at owning dogs.
Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure. Like, I get the aggression
clearly
part.
Clearly.
You can't, you know, you have to be able to, but you should be able to train aggression out. Like,
they said even the hen thing, they're like, that's actually pretty normal for them, too. Like, yeah, that's a very unfortunate, but you can sear him away from those kinds of things. Like, there's ways to train that out, too.
Was he not, there wasn't in any instance of him being aggressive toward people, it was just the chicken thing?
No, she tried to say, oh, he turned around and he was going to bite me. And I'm like, how you, like, that's not a bite. That's not the same thing as a bite.
Yeah, that's, no, fuck this lady.
No, she fucking sucks. Killed this dog, killed the goat just because he was stinky.
I retract my process criticism of take him to the vet. Like, if there wasn't even aggression, like, fuck you.
No, this dog was just a dog. Like, yeah. He was just doing dog shit.
On the other hand, you know, if the other guy had shot him for the chicken thing.
I get it, might, at least.
Yeah, I would say not what I would do first thing.
No.
But, maybe I would go shoot a gun in the area, you know, be like, blam, go
yeah,
away.
Scare him off or something. But, like, also, if you know you have a rowdy-ass dog who apparently has not been around chickens before, maybe leave his kennel fucking shut, idiot.
Yeah. Well, and this is another guy, though. I mean, the other guy would have to, like, build a fence or something for this person's dog, right?
Well, no, she, like, went to visit the neighbor.
Oh, yeah, I'm not letting the neighbor bring
the dog there.
The hen-killing dog, the crazy dog.
Yeah, she brought the dog to, like, and she apparently did not secure the kennel.
No, RIP this dog, friend of the show, this
Cricket.
Dog, comrade this dog.
Cricket.
Comrade Cricket. Justice for Cricket.
Justice for Cricket. She also killed a goat just because he was stinky, because she didn't castrate it. And guess what happens when you don't castrate boy goats? They get stinky.
Aren't goats just not fragrant animals?
Well, they specifically pee, like, in their beards and shit. Like, they just are covered in piss all the time.
Huh.
And they're, like, really aggro. And she was like, oh, he would attack my children. It's like, why are your children hanging out with an uncastrated goat? Like, everyone knows that's dangerous.
This lady just doesn't believe in the vet or something.
She doesn't know how to do anything. She's a fucking idiot.
Who is this?
What's her name? I just closed the very embarrassing Google. Christy Noem.
Dude, Christy Noem's out there doing this?
Yeah. What's her deal?
She's
stupid
ridiculous.
In other ways?
No, she's, like, been talked about as a Trump VP.
I see this.
She had people say a glow up. I think that she's already a good looking lady.
Oh, wait, let me see. I didn't see her face. Oh, my, she looks horrible to me.
It's not. Well, she's older. I don't know.
No, she just she has an Instagram model face.
It's like a white lady.
Yeah, look. It's like a white lady. I mean, I'm just saying. I know I could send a picture of this woman to Kyle, and he'd be like, "Ugh."
Yeah.
Like opposite of our type.
Yeah. Anyway, she's been talked about for like national aspirations in that sort of a sense. Fuck her.
Dog terrible. Killer.
Yeah. Oh, if you hear in the background, Dipper agrees.
Justice for Cricket.
Dipper barks in solidarity with Cricket and with the goat.
Good.
The goat,
good.
I mean, yeah, living a gross goat life, but like, just
castrate
him.
Yeah, castrate the goat.
Figure it out. Yeah.
And apparently she also had mentioned that like, that's how life is on the farm. We put down 3 horses last year, and someone was like, that's a lot of horses to kill at the same time. What happened?
Found that's the glue like factory guy.
An unusual amount of horses.
Let's see. Oh, this headline in The Guardian mentions, kind of tongue-in-cheek, Kristi Noem had a shot at Trump VP slot before dog killing bill, sources say.
She took her shot elsewhere in the skulls of animals.
But, I mean, I think
conservatives are going to eat this shit up.
Well, yeah, maybe. But I think that specifically Trump, I mean, he's a noted opponent of dogs. They should go on the anti-dog platform. He's always like, oh, yeah, he ran away like a dog, you know.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, yeah, I did this like a dog.
He's not an animal person. Like, I can't picture him interacting with an animal.
No, he would. He's
too,
be
like,
grossed out.
Psychopathic for that, you know.
Yeah.
He doesn't have that ability.
No empathy or whatever.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's so weird.
Inhuman, I would say. I mean, no offense if you're not an animal person. That's fine.
Oh, no. That's okay. I
don't get it.
I'm obsessed with animals, but
yeah, they bring meaning to my life, but you know, it's fucking fine. Let's see what else. I've got a little excerpt from the Irish Times on quiet quitting again.
People are still quiet quitting?
So here's the thing. So I used to think, and I think we all assumed this, that quiet quitting meant you're not going to do your job. You know, like you're just showing up. Or you're going to do a bad job at your job.
That's what was initial. That's the initial definition of it. But I do think it evolved in popular usage, at least in the capitalist class.
It has evolved. So this quote, what employers have found since is that quiet quitting is worse than the inconvenience of having an employee leave. Quiet quitters are hard to handle both on the job and in performance reviews because they continue to complete their assigned workload to the same, often high, standard, giving their managers an uneasy feeling but nothing specific to complain about. Y'all, this is my manual for how I work.
Yes, do this. Work this, just enough.
Just retweet this with like advice for young professionals out there.
Yeah. Don't say yes to extra shit.
No.
Do your job.
Do they just, so in order to not be quitting at your job, you just have to be horny for your job 24/7?
Yeah, that's what they want. They want submission compliance.
They want Jorgis at the beginning of the book, like, haha, I'm part of the great machine. I love it here.
Yeah, and, you know, part of it's psychological in the sense of the, you know, that manager wanting, you know, loyalty and whatever. But a lot of it is, and most of it, the driving force is economical. I mean, they want that surplus labor.
I see this in pretty much every industry too, of you see young people throwing themselves, not as much anymore, thank God they fucking wised up, but like when I was coming up, you'd see young people throw themselves into the machine, whatever it is their field is, and get chewed up and spit out with burnout, and then they like can't get a job for a while because they're like they've given themselves an illness or an injury, or they're just so like creatively fucking wiped that they have a hard time bouncing back from it. And like, you see that in the comics industry, you see that in the design industry, you see that in publishing, like everywhere. Like that's so fucking common.
Oh yeah. And I'll say from personal experience, that was
teaching. Fuck.
Teaching.
Yeah.
I had a lot of like positive, you know, help in that. You know, I was living with my parents and had a lot of that taken care of, and it was still super fucking hard. Like I look back on it now because I'm having to kind of prep stuff new this year. And I'm like, how did I do this? Like those first couple of years, like how I was, you know, young, fresh out of college is how, like I had just had the extra energy to devote all that extra time and thought that I needed to. And that's what I did.
You have the energy and the passion for like a short period of time. And then eventually, like, hopefully you realize, like, I don't need to spend this much energy and passion on this. Like, this is a means to an end, and the end is the paycheck, and, like, let's fucking get it over with, you know?
And that's from our end, from the employer's end.
They don't want that.
Yeah, well, and they kind of systemically increasingly can't afford that. In the easy days, you know, when the government is subsidizing so many people and stimulating demand, and like you can just kind of trip and fall and make a Fortune 500 company.
I mean, even think about like Mad Men era, you know, like mm-hmm. these guys are dicking around like 75% of the workday
and still raking it in. Yeah,
exactly.
That's not universal, but it was way easier to make a profit and still give your workers a bunch of stuff and not really rip them off that badly. And increasingly, I mean, we've lived through part of this, but I mean, since kind of the 70s, you have this clawing back of the imperial deal with labor, all right, with between capital and labor of like, hey, we're going to like give you benefits and shit. Don't, you know, do anything crazy, communistic or anything. You can have your little unions or whatever, but we're giving you a good deal. And make us, you know, help us make profit, because that's easy.
The deal is disintegrating.
Yeah, as that's been clawed back over the decades and decades. That was the first step, is let's eat that, and that way we'll still keep making profit, because it's getting harder out there, because we're getting less support. People are getting less support. We're having increased competition, rising giant of China and, you know, international competition and all that. Well, eventually it comes down to we're still trying to make money in different ways. Some people are just doing scams, right? Of just venture capitalist things of like, oh yeah, we got a tech company that's an app that lets you buy ice cream from when you're on the subway, or just stupid shit. They're like, well, okay, well, what?
And we're not going to make a profit for like 3 years, but that's part of our plan. It's called a burn rate or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like what they're just like, yeah, it's going to take us, you know, X many years to actually turn a profit on this. Our capital is just so fucking large that we can afford to do that.
Yeah. And what's crazy is even before, when they first like present this to people and people start pouring the money in, they're like, what do you have like now before you even get to trying to make a profit? We don't. We need to build the app and everything.
We don't have shit. This is just a dumb idea.
Yeah. So like they turn to scams like that to try to make money. And, you know, when that's drying up and people are realizing kind of the bullshit of that, everybody but the money launderers, basically, then it's like, OK, what else can we do? Well, we can the classic Marxist analysis of it, like not Marxist, but like Marx himself, his analysis of this was, well, they rented you out for a certain amount of time. They can squeeze you harder.
Yeah. I mean, OK. I'm going to sound conspiracy theorist for a second, but like, I think this is definitely the case in Hollywood, like the laundering of money. Mm-hmm. There's so many of these projects that get like money poured into it. And they're like, yeah, we developed this whole movie, especially animation. I think it's particularly bad because it's just a very exploitable workforce, I think. I don't actually know why, what the reasoning's behind. I'm guessing it's because there's fewer big names attached to it. They feel like they can get away with it, maybe. But you hear all the time of like these movies, entire shows being developed and then shelved and never to be released. Like, it's fucking done. It's just like, we pulled the plug. And it's like, wait, so like, where'd the money go? You know? It's yeah. Just so bizarre. Like, you see this happening all the time. You see it a lot with Netflix too, I will say, and not just in the animation sphere.
You gotta wonder, what was the entire point there? And maybe it's just like,
what'd you do with that money?
once you produce it and stuff, then you're like, okay, well, I want to get the right price to market it or something. I don't know.
You might as well fucking put it out, you know, like you have a stream, you have all the infrastructure set up for it. It's not like it's gonna take up more room on the fucking server. Like, just fucking put it there,
right? You're not gonna get a big like movie release for everything, and you can put it up there with all the other crap that's produced.
People watch everything.
I have one scrap if we want.
Yeah, give me a scrap.
This is from the end of last week, a instance of getting the goods, a payoff for a regular person at the expense of a big business.
Okay, I love that.
Yeah, the headline is in the New York Times. He paid $13 for $13,000.
Cartier.
Yeah, Cartier. There you go. I was going to say it that way, but I was like, I don't know. Is that how you say it?
Yeah. I'm glad I could take that bullet for you. I heard about this. This is so fucking funny.
Straight out of Cartier's window for this guy. And then the jeweler noticed. So this is a guy in Mexico, Rogelio Villarreal.
I love a Rogelio.
That's a good name, isn't it?
It's a great name.
He bought these earrings he saw online, and they were priced at 237 Mexican pesos, or about $13. And they were from Cartier. They were 18-karat rose gold cuffs lined with diamonds. And he was like, yeah, I'll take those.
I'll take that. That sounds like a great deal.
So he bought two pairs. And then they adjusted the price to 237,000 pesos. Or $13,000.
Wow. So yeah. What do you think he does? Okay, this is you. You're Rogelio. Do you, when your wife forever, assuming your wife is someone who cares about that sort of thing, which I don't think your wife is, she would like never wear them. She would sell them. She, yeah. Even if you gave them to her, the end result would be like, no, I'm going to sell these. Or yeah, do you sell them?
I'd give her the option. I think it'd be cool. I'd tell her the story and maybe she keeps them because it's fucking funny.
Hey, if anything, you know, inheritance, lock them away in a safe.
Yeah.
little nest egg for you.
Yeah, so he ends up having to go back and forth, and it's this big thing on social media. You heard about it, right?
Yeah.
So did you see any of that?
No, I saw the price difference. I think the one I saw was in pounds for some reason. And I saw that, like, technically the terms and services, like, agreed with him. Like, it was like a, no, it's fucking done. Like, there's nothing you can do about it kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He had to go back and forth with them. I love how they tried to rip him off at first. Initially.
They try to get him back, right?
They start trying to cancel the order, saying, like, hey, yeah, that's not available. And he's like, he just doesn't. He ignores them. And so they start calling him up, and they're like, you know, that was the wrong price. So we were going to cancel the order, and we're going to give you compensation for this. You know, that's a disappointment. I'm sorry about that. You know, so they said, well, we're going to give you, quote, a gesture from the House of Cartier, which was a complimentary bottle of Cartier Cuvée champagne. Okay. Is that how you say Cuvée champagne?
I'm not sure.
All right. And a leather Cartier item, according to an email sent to him.
And that is not worth 200 whatever thousand dollars, though.
Yeah, $13,000?
Yeah.
And he was like, no thanks.
I would like to keep the very expensive earrings, please.
So he did, you know, went to their website and filled out the little, you know, contact us bullshit. And was like, yeah, you know, federal consumer protection law here in Mexico says I can take you to court. For not respecting the terms and conditions that I bought this under.
Incredible. Way to go, Rogelio.
Yeah, so he fights it. And basically, you can take this dispute to the Office of the Federal Prosecutor for the Consumer to try to figure out, you know, what should happen here. It's kind of like our FTC, but apparently with teeth.
it can actually help people.
Yeah.
Wow. And so
they backed him up.
Damn, is he going to sell it?
No, I think he intended it as a gift for his mom.
Oh, what a good boy. What a good Mexican man.
Rogelio.
Loves his mom.
Totally unlike Patricio. Patricio would sell it.
Patricio did not love his mom.
He would not have bought the earrings for his mom, but like one pair for his wife or girlfriend and one for his mistress.
Mistress, yeah.
And then once he found out the price difference, he would have sold both of them.
No, for sure. He would have snuck them away in the middle of the night, replaced them with fake ones that gave them ear infections.
Then he would have told his mom and she would have cried about it.
Oh, yeah. Now, this is referencing the Spanish soap opera. Or I don't know where it was from.
I think it was on Univision.
It was Univision, yeah. But I guess I didn't know what country the origin is. But Corona de Lagrimas.
I think it was set in Mexico City, I want to say, mostly.
Okay. Yeah, where our mom watched that show.
But finally, so he won the thing. Basically, Cartier backed down. It was ahead of the consumer agency mediation hearing. He got a notice saying, yep, you will fulfill your orders. And so he got the earrings and was like, yay, I got
them.
Good
for him.
Yeah. Victory for, even though this one shithead senator in Mexico like tweeted, oh, this guy's abusing the system. Like,
oh,
this is not what this is supposed to be.
Although I bet somebody was super fired from Cartier.
Yeah, that's probably true.
I bet.
Probably just a regular worker, but hey.
Oh, what are you going to do?
Yeah, that's not Mr. Villarreal's fault. That's Cartier's fault.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing that. But anyway, uplifting story, a rare one here.
Yeah, I know. I feel like we should end it just because like we so rarely end with that.
Yeah, normally it's more along the lines of dog killing or goat killing or student protester bashing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's embrace it. Okay, next week we're taking a little break, doing a little movie night.
Hell yeah, we were mentioning fascism and how, you know, fascistic tendencies in the U.S. are fairly subtle to some extent.
So some people, I guess. I would say it also depends on like who you are and how the world perceives you.
Yeah, you know? You can get the blunt end of it a lot of times.
Yeah.
But we're going to watch a movie about not so subtle fascism, openly fascism. And it kind of ties into a popular video game that's out now, Helldivers 2.
Yeah.
Have you heard people talking about this?
I have, yes, of that it's very fashy.
It is, but it's also in the same vein as Starship Troopers. It's making fun of it. That's what we're watching, Starship Troopers. It looks like you may need to get creative or get rich in terms of watching it.
Get creative or get rich is just good advice in general for these times.
That was like the Gilded Age motto, right? Get creative or get rich.
Oh, God.
Or get with a friend, pool your money together, get with a bunch of friends.
Do a group
watch. Get with a bunch of friends on the internet and Google where you can find it for free, whatever.
You know?
Whatever you want to do.
It doesn't matter. There's a lot of weird discourse right now about piracy, and it's like, you know when it's okay and when it's not okay, right? Like, if it's a giant fucking corporation, I think it's okay.
But then we were talking about one of the big things in the actor strike and stuff, and the writer strike was residuals and stuff, and that has to be paid out of somewhere.
It does.
And you're a big opponent of, like, AI stuff because of the... you know, effect that would have on artists and things.
I understand. I do understand both of the arguments for it. I guess my thing is there is a difference between like, yes, I would like to pay for like indie art or something like that, or, you know, an indie movie, whatever it is, a small startup kind of video game situation. And like, you know, Pokemon's not going to fucking die because you've got that new emulator thing for the iPhone. I think Nintendo's going to be okay.
Yeah, no, you're right. I think that's interesting in some respects. It's like when we were talking about, you know, BDS, part of that being sanctions on a country. It's like, well, that's really bad when we're talking about Cuba because it's a good country. But,
yeah,
you know, it's good when you're talking about Israel because they're doing terrible things.
Exactly.
So that's the weakness of hypocrisy analysis, you know. Anyway, find it how you find it.
You do you.
Get it how you get it. Starship Troopers.
We will be watching it and talking about it next week.
Yeah.
Okay, talk to y'all then.
Adios.
And bye. Hey there, comrades. Just jumping in to remind you of all of our social media. We are on Twitter at Teach Communism, Instagram at Teach Me Communism. You can shoot us an email. That's teachmecommunism@gmail.com. Any of those places are good to send us an episode suggestion or a question, anything you think would be useful feedback for us, or just your admiration. If you want to admire us in a public manner, and you should, you can go to Apple Podcasts to give us a review. It is the best way to help people find the show. Love when people write and review us. Please do both. We are also on YouTube, if that's how you prefer to listen to podcasts, or if you know someone that's the only way they'll listen to podcasts, send them to our page. And we have a Patreon. For $5 a month, you get access to our notes for each week's episode, including the backlog of notes, which is a very handy resource for up-and-coming commies. And at the end of the year, all of the funds from Patreon will be given to local mutual aid in the DFW area. So, ain't going to line our pockets. Finally, we have merch. Check us out at TeePublic. You can find shirts and I believe also stickers and magnets and all kinds of fun stuff. with catchphrases from the show or episode art, stuff like that. The link to that store is in the show notes, so check that out. Okay, that's all the internet. Join us next time for another episode of Teach Me Communism, where the class struggle is always in session. Bye, y'all.